one into the night. Deep into right. Way out of here.
Swung on.
Bit crushed.
And the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
From WHYY, welcome to your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. I'm Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus, and I'm the author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were doing while Joe DiMaggio was making history. Available now. With me is Liz Rocher, the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Hello, Liz.
What were the Phillies doing while everyone else was playing decent baseball this year?
Don't even think about baseball, Liz. I think we can just focus on how Wednesday night, Gritty threw a stuffed penguin from the upper deck at the Wells Fargo Center to celebrate the Flyers kicking the butts of the Pittsburgh Penguins in the NHL playoffs. Did you see the guy, the Penguins fan, who called it a, quote, physical homicide and, quote, grisly murder, comparing the actions of Gritty to our government's war in Iran?
I would like to thank our good friend Nick Piccone for digging this man up. one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in my life. I mean, incredible. I don't want to be complicit. I don't want you to be complicit. I don't want to be complicit in the murder of an empty
toy.
Costume stuffed toy. The costume is empty. There's no one in there, and Gritty is fake. None of this happened. This was a storybook. This was a little play you watched, and I'm sorry if it bothered you, but unfortunately, that's life, you idiot.
This is playoff hockey. You know, I love the mindset of, like, look, I know most of the time a fan of the losing team in a big game who was humiliated isn't going to be able to express an objective point without their bias clouding everything about it. But I'm going to stand up and say that this is the worst crime I've ever witnessed. And it will be taken seriously, even yes. though I'm a Penguins fan whose team just lost. This is the time that this statement will be taken seriously. I hope the State Department gets involved, because this is that high of an offense.
I wish they would get involved. Please give us all something else to do.
Just a great distraction. Another direction to look in those Flyers. I never thought, I would say in all the years we've been doing Phillies podcasts, I have very rarely had the opportunity or the remembrance to, like, thank the Flyers for anything. Rare are the Aprils where we're sitting here mentioning the Flyers, because they're just, you know, they just haven't been much of a factor in hockey for a long time. And this year,
not good.
I am so glad for the people of Philadelphia to have, even for as long as it lasts, a playoff run of some kind. And yes, I'm aware of the Sixers in the playoffs. That's different. But regardless, you have a great feel-good story with the Flyers, and it gives people an alternative thing to look at. And classic moments like getting accused of a grisly murder by an opposing fan. That's playoff hockey. That's a great, you know, it's wonderful to have another option of things to look at before we, yes, inevitably on this show, turn back ever so slowly, reluctantly, and begrudgingly to the disaster that is the 2026 Philadelphia Phillies season. You check in every day to just learn how bad things have gotten. And today we can tell you, yesterday, well, they didn't get better. And now, like rancid meat left rotting in the sun, the Phillies are attracting rats. This is from a Chicago Sun-Times article on a rat running through the visitors' dugout at Wrigley Field yesterday.
Oh my God, the symbolism.
Rob Thompson took it in stride. No, he said, he'd never seen a rat on the field during a game. He ran right, almost right over my toes, Thompson said. I could see him over there, sitting on that ball bucket, and I knew he was going to keep on coming. Started running, came right by the dugout. I've seen squirrels last year at Citizens Bank Park. It was at night. A squirrel ran over my right hand. Thompson thought a bit more.
What?
I take it back. I saw rats at Shea Stadium.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Rat attraction, or rat traction, as the experts call it, is one of the core tenets of the New York Mets organization, even today. And while it has been something of a silver lining to see the Mets go lower and lower and lower every time the Phillies sink this season, you know, the Mets actually lost Francisco Lindor for potentially months to a calf issue just yesterday.
I had no idea.
Yeah. But we're not here to talk about them today. This is not one where we're looking for positives, because I'm not going to say there aren't any, but right now, positives are more about like, okay, how does this serve the negatives? Because the negatives are so, so dominating with these Phillies. I mean, anybody who was hoping to put on their little hat and their little sunglasses and go down to tailgate and K-Lot all summer for a fun old time at the ball yard, well, guess what, all Phillies fans? The Phillies are terrible and are already in a hole deep enough that if you do keep watching, you're going to spend the rest of the season watching them try to figure this out. And that's kind of where I want to start, Liz. I mean, any argument you have about the quality of a team, good or bad, at this point in the season, we all know the refrain you'll get in response is, well, it's early. You get your eyes rolled at you for complaining. But we've kind of nailed down that regardless of what time of year it is, nobody wants to watch their team play as messily and sloppily as the Phillies have been. And regardless of how much time is left, the Phillies are 9.5 games back in the National League East. They are in last place, yes, below the Mets in the standings. Mm-hmm. So you can't even really make that whole meat shield argument I was making just a couple minutes ago. But the Phillies are 9.5 games back, and yes, the plus of it being early, the reason you say that is because, okay, they're 9.5 games back. They've lost 9 in a row. They've lost 9 of 10. That's all bad. Run differential's terrible. We all know that. But there's time. You have the gift of time because it is not even May. It's still a month from Memorial Day. You have so much time to come out of that hole. But to that, I would say 9.5 games back is 9.5 games back. The Phillies aren't going to win 9.5 games in a row and have all the other teams lose 9.5 games in a row and be back on top in a week and a half. That's not how that's going to happen. Uh-huh. This is going to now be a fight for at least weeks, probably months, to get out of this hole. Because you're also assuming that even when this team's playing better, how much better are they going to play? How long will they be playing at that higher level? So this will be a season long, I believe, fight to get out of the hole they've put themselves in April. So Liz, does the argument that it's still early really hold any water for you?
No. I mean, it's early is something you say about hitters who are trying to figure things out, and you say it about teams in the first couple of weeks, but they've been playing this way for a month. Like, this is a full month now. And that's tough to come back from. Like, this is, I said a couple of weeks ago, I think on the podcast, like, it was a weekend series. It might have been last week. And like, this is the series that defines what we're talking about for the rest of the season. If they could pull it off here, then there's some hope that we might get like just a regular season where they're battling with, you know, the top teams. But they lost that series. And now this is it. This is the topic of the season, whether we like it or not. It's, can they dig themselves out of this massive hole they put themselves into? Because even though there's a full season to play, that doesn't mean there's enough room for the Phillies to, you know, overcome that, especially if they don't start playing well.
Right.
Oh, God, they face the Braves this weekend again.
There are some very respected people, Liz, who have suggested that if they get swept... by the Atlanta Braves this weekend. And the only teams they've played for 2 weeks now are the Cubs and Braves, two of the hottest teams in baseball. If they get swept by the Braves this weekend, there's some reasonable people who are saying, yeah, you can call it. Like, that's it. You lose 12 games in a row and you're this far back. And you know, despite, and your only counter argument is it's early. When you have no idea how some of these guys, if they're going to bounce back, when they're going to bounce back, pitchers, hitters, fielders, who's here, who's not. There's just now too many sure things have turned into question marks, and too many question marks remain question marks for this team to really have a lot of faith in this team really pulling it together and having what we were referring to as a Walt Weiss tackling Jorge Soler moment for the season. This more and more just feels like this is the Braves year. When you're talking about the NL East, this feels like right now, a month in, this is looking like the Braves year. The Mets have horrible luck and are playing very poorly. The Phillies have horrible luck and are playing very poorly. The Braves are thriving. The Braves are pulling ahead. They're taking advantage of the situation. Their good players are hitting. They're getting enough from where they need it. And, you know, other than the Dodgers, the Braves are a feel-good story in the National League. So are the Cubs. But both of those teams have gotten to take turns beating up on the Phillies, the worst team in the National League. So, you know, how much credence do you want to give their success? I don't know.
That's a good question, considering that after the Braves, they're facing the Giants again.
Oh, they're facing the Giants, the A's, the Rockies, and the Marlins after this. They have a soft schedule that guarantees nothing.
Well, and on top of that, it's all teams they've played already. Like, who put this schedule together? I want to hit them in the face.
Oh, didn't you? The story is that it was a married couple, an old married couple, that put the MLB schedule together for years and did it flawlessly, and then they stopped, and it's never been the same.
No, no. What happened is, they stopped, and my guess is we've written a computer program that'll do it better than these two people who've been doing it forever and have untold amounts of information in their brain. I hate stuff like that so much. There's no reason to change things if things are working. I don't care if you could save a few $1,000s.
Where things are not working are on the diamond with the Philadelphia Phillies. And like I said, they did not get too far on Thursday, losing their ninth straight game and getting swept by the Chicago Cubs through four. Brandon Marsh, the only good Philly. He was the only hitter worth anything in this game. He gave the Phillies their first run with a home run. He gave them their second run with an RBI single. He gave them their third run with a second home run. Meanwhile, in the background, the Cubs scored six times. So not exactly even. But Christopher Sanchez got beat up again by the Cubs lineup. Mm-hmm. Another depressing development there. Giving up a career-high 10 hits and six earned runs. Seven Cubs had multi-hit days on Thursday. Whoa. Seven. Including one guy who came in late as a pinch hitter.
Oh, bullpen, my God.
The bullpen held these guys off, held the Cubs off. You know, credit where credit's due for the most part. But the damage was done, chiefly because of the damage he allowed, and also because Phillies hitters have no natural instinct to swing and hit the ball with solid contact. Liz, yesterday the Phillies were down 6-2, and they managed to tie a game against the hottest team in baseball, the Cubs, so that it was 6-6. The Cubs retook the lead 7-6 immediately off Brad Keller. And then Adolis Garcia retied the game at 7-7 in the ninth. Casey Drotter of MLB.com wrote, "It seemed as if every member of the Phillies felt as though Thursday was the day the longest active losing streak in the majors was going to be put to bed." And I do want to talk about that, Liz, because there was a moment in this game before the Phillies. It was right after Brandon Marsh's second home run, I want to say, to make it 6-3. And Bryson Stott singled. And Alec Bohm, who I recently called the easiest out in baseball, came up to the plate and clocked one. Was kind of looking like a home run, but it went off the fence after Seiya Suzuki out there, like, jumped up to catch it in a play that we've seen a million times this season where, like, oh, well-struck ball by a Phillies player was caught, either just because the guy, that's where he was positioned, or he makes a dazzling defensive play out of nowhere. It's not out of nowhere for Suzuki. He's a great player, but he jumps up, catches this ball. Then, like, it flies out of his glove. He hits the fence. He hits the warning track. Cloud of dust flies up. It's all very undignified and silly looking. And you're just like, ugh. Oh, wait, that's not happening to the Phillies. That's happening for the Phillies. And it was the kind of moment. They don't get those moments. They have not been getting any of those breaks this year. That's not the only reason they've been bad, but it is one of the reasons they have received no breaks. They have gotten no bounces. And you were just like, wait, perhaps that is the breakthrough moment. And from that moment forward, they retied the game. They tied the game and then retied the game. And what made me even sadder about the inevitable conclusion of this game was that when Adolis Garcia, he like made a play in the field and was like kind of, you know, ragging on some fans. And then when he hit that home run in the seventh, he was like going down to first base, trying to like amp up the dugout. And I just don't know if anybody was buying in. And it was sad. I was giving him all the credit in the world. It just felt like, I don't know how many other Phillies were like up against the railing. Like based on the shot I could see, it didn't look like too many of them were like up on the railing, like pointing back at him. It just felt like he's trying to like get some juice going here. And the team is just like, cause like, that's just kind of like where they're at right now. And that was one of the bummer moment for me, even before they lost. Did you feel like the team was potentially getting its energy back in that moment where it was like, oh, look, now the Cubs are screwing up. Maybe the Phillies are going to be able to take advantage of their mistakes instead of the opposite.
It almost felt like the Phillies didn't want to celebrate too hard because they were afraid it would disappear like a mirage in front of them.
It's kind of fair.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I think. Like, I give Garcia so much credit for being into it because he knows what his numbers look like and he knows what he just did. You know, he helped team get to this point he contributed positively to them, you know, being able to extend the game. And he, you know, he knows what his numbers look like. He knows he hasn't been doing that. So it had to have felt really good for him to be part of something positive, something that actually extended the game. And I just feel sad that the rest of the Phillies were like, I'm afraid. It's going to go away. And then it did.
They had a couple of chances, as you might have guessed. Justin Crawford, two of their better hitters. Poor Justin Crawford struck out with the bases loaded.
Oh, God.
One of their big chances. And Brandon Marsh struck out with two men on at in a position to give the Phillies the lead as well. And that didn't happen. They were 2-for-11 with runners in scoring position. You know, we've heard that song before. Mm-hmm. That's not a new one. So they went into extras yesterday with the game tied at 7-7. At one point, Liz, it looked like Scott Kingery was going to score the walk-off run against the Phillies, which I don't know if there's just enough of those guys across the league to create that moment more often than it feels, but it sure does feel like when the Phillies, you know, when there's a dagger, it's always there's always a guy like Scott Kingery, a former Philly, ready to deliver that dagger.
Oh, always. Was it Austin Hayes that the Phillies had a few years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Who was absolute crap. And then the Phillies played him. He like hit like a madman. It always happens to the Phillies. Guys are so happy to be there, and then they're so happy to play against them after they've gone.
Well, Tanner Banks replaced Jose Alvarado after the Phillies gave up their opportunity to score in the top of the 10th. Opened the inning with an intentional walk to Seiya Suzuki. Gave up a single to Carson Kelly. Won a challenge. Michael Busch tried to challenge his way out of a strikeout, but the Phillies managed to log an out. But only moments later did Dansby Swanson single to right field and knock in the winning run to give the Cubs the win. So it was the closest thing to a win, I think you can say, that the Phillies
that
have
experienced yeah.
since the last time they won, which God only knows when that was.
Nope.
But they did ultimately lose, and I think I don't even have to ask, Liz, that at this point, the type of loss, not a factor. It's just another L, and you know the first thing you got to do to pull out of this is win a ball game. That's step one.
Yeah, there's nothing else matters right now than that. It doesn't matter how anybody is individually doing. The point is to win a ball, just win a ball game, any ball game, just win one. Just win a game, score more runs than the other team that's playing. And that's going to be real hard this weekend. I'm looking at the box score once again. I can't believe the Phillies managed to tie the game with just eight hits.
Well, that's what I mean.
The
Cubs, they were catching
18.
Some breaks.
They were catching some breaks.
But Alex
the Cubs
Bregman
had 18 hits. That's so many.
That never happens. Bregman had a defensive miscue. And like that's why I was like, this has some juice because the Cubs are giving them some leeway here. The Cubs are opening the door. Trey Turner was caught leaning at first, but managed to get back on a play that, like, you know, for the last 9 days, he's out because that's just the way it's been going for the Phillies. So it really felt like for a minute, this could have been that game. I felt that same way in the game where Felix Reyes came up and hit a home run in his first at bat and Sanchez struck out the next two hitters. It was like, yeah, this could be the game. That wasn't the game either. So whatever, you know, you're waiting for to see the team turning around, they've gotten close, but still haven't managed to even do that. And now they get to try it again against the Braves, which, you know, is going to be brutal because the offense is still basically a non-factor in addition to all of the other problems with the Phillies. Hey, it's April 24th, Liz. Did you know back in 2003, Chase Utley hit a grand slam in his first major league start for the Phillies on this day, leading to a 9-1 victory over the Rockies. And in 2008, Pat Burrell drove in two runs to break the team RBI record for the month of April with 24. He edged out Vaughn Hayes, who had 22 in 1989. I just say these things to remind you potentially of what offense looks like and how we have experienced it before on this day, specifically from players we've heard of. But my question for you, Liz, is where is the offense? Like physically, where is the Phillies offense?
They've gone on vacation or they're on strike. I'm not sure. They're just not there. Like, yesterday was positive, at least. Like, if we're looking for that, like, it's hard to think. They could build momentum off of a loss, which they're obviously not going to do. But there were some positive things that happened on Thursday. And there were things that looked good. Like, Brandon Marsh is continuing to prove that he's legit. Like, that's...
A legit trade target or trade candidate, you mean?
I don't want them to do that to him. I like him. I want him to stay. Well, he's legitimately good. They just have to get him out of the platoon, and he's completely perfect. I'm just so sad that he's just like, someone else help me. And everyone's like, I'm on
the
break.
Platoon with the non-top prospect corner infielder that he's in left field. Yes, I agree. That's a platoon that doesn't need to exist. Did you think, Liz, I was putting a lot of focus on the moments that seem like things might be turning around, even in a single game for the Phillies. Did you think, honestly, as Suzuki missed that ball that Bohm hit and several other things started going the Phillies' way, did you think the losing streak was going to end on Thursday, yesterday, against the Cubs?
Oh, of course. Like, midway through the game, like around the seventh inning, they scored 3 runs in that inning. And I'm like, all right, maybe I'll open a beer. I feel like, you know, I haven't worn a single Phillies shirt since they started losing. I've just been doing it in protest. I have not been very thrilled looking at watching the games, spending a lot of time on my phone. But I thought yesterday, like, and midway through the game, but like mostly through the game, I thought, let's open a beer. Maybe something good will happen. And good things continued to happen until they stopped happening. I got to tell you, I don't like opening the inning with an intentional walk. I don't care if Seiya Suzuki is hitting the cover off the ball, which he is doing. I don't care.
You got the ghost runner on second. They were trying to create a force out at every base.
I know, but with the team being the way it has been, I feel like that's messing. You're playing with fire. It's a decision you have to make, and Thompson made it, and it's certainly a legitimate thing to do.
I totally agree. I wouldn't even say it's playing with fire. I think it's actively spreading a fire that's already started. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm glad you agree, because I saw that. I'm just like, what is he doing? Like, Suzuki has been really good, and all I see when I look at him are the missed chances of what would have happened if he'd signed with Philly, because I think it would have been a team that he could have enjoyed. But there he is with the Cubs, and it's just depressing to watch him do well. And I don't like, you know, some people say it's a sign of respect. I think it's just a sign of fear. In that situation, the beginning of an inning, to just be like, no, we're not dealing with this guy. We're too scared. If they had been a good team lately and decided to do that, maybe I'd look at it differently. But to me, it's just like, now we're scared. We can't do this.
Oh,
let's
yeah.
Let's just put him on base and move on.
If you've got a bullpen that's been like white knuckling it through some late innings heroism and like really making a name for themselves, and you really can rely on them to be like, all right, we can get through the eye of a needle here with our bullpen. We can navigate a tight lead or a close game, or bring a guy in with 2 men on and the lead on the line and feel like we genuinely are going to get out of this. When you're playing with like the big boys, you can do that. This is not a big boy team. You can point at the Phillies, any part of the Phillies, and find a problem that you could then make an argument is their biggest problem. Let's start with hitting. This is a 2-day-old Matt Gelb tweet. Still relevant. Over the last 128 years, only 2 Phillies teams have had a lower batting average through 23 games than the 2026 Phillies, who were hitting .218 at the time. That batting average has rocketed up to .219 since the publishing of this tweet. It's their lowest mark through 23 games since 1941. Read all about the 1941 Phillies in the new classic book, Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were doing while Joe DiMaggio was making history. They have the second worst batting average at .219 in baseball. They have the 5th worst OPS as a team in all of baseball at .658. .658. They aren't drawing walks. They aren't stealing bases. They aren't knocking in runs. I'd say as far as tenets of an offense, those are 3 pretty big ones to like get the ball rolling and get runs to start coming in. Let's just skip the cumulative stuff and go right to the counting stats. Hits, you know, the things that generate offense. The Phillies have 185 hits this year. That is more than two National League teams, and neither of them are the Rockies. The Phillies have fewer hits than the Rockies by, like, a lot. The Rockies have 220 hits on the season.
No.
The difference there being, what, 35 hits? How many games would it take these Phillies to rack up 35 hits? 8?
That's 10? So many.
And that's if the Rockies just didn't hit for that for like a solid week, which, you know, you want a joke could happen, but I don't know if the Rockies are the punchline of that joke anymore. I think it might be the Phillies.
The Phillies are not. If there's a joke you're making about the National League, it's the Phillies are the butt of it. Because they've done nothing but lose. Yeah, everybody wants to play the Phillies. Like, everyone's like, the Braves must be so happy. Like, they get to pad their season stats early on because the Phillies are just sucking. And
can you imagine?
God, I hope they pull this up. Whew.
Can you imagine if the Phillies, if the Braves were coming to Philadelphia and it was total reversed, that the Phillies were leading the division by like a decent margin, the Braves were down there with the Mets, like having absolutely nonsensical struggles, but also very, you know, clearly definable struggles as well. Their short-term and long-term futures are like kind of in question. Their team president's out here just giving like, you know, non-answers because that's all he can do at this point. The manager's just kind of grabbing the railing and being like, well, let's hope Jesus Luzardo doesn't give up another hit today. The owner's just showing off his art collection to the New York Times and bragging about how his nickname in the art community is Mr. Big. Like, you're seeing that and you're a Phillies fan in that scenario and the weekend is coming and it's like a beautiful Friday. You're like, absolutely. Let's grab a 30 rack and the cornhole boards and head down of the parking lot. Let's just have a great, this is gonna be a great weekend. We're playing a soft team that just is waiting to get run over. They're a team that's really fun to beat, a team whose fans you love to tick off. Like, this is great. What a weekend this is gonna be in Philadelphia. Now, granted, the fan culture in Atlanta is different because, you know, but like, that's what they get to look forward to this weekend, playing the Phillies. The Phillies are that team. The Phillies are that roadkill that they're just going to drive over again until it's unrecognizable. The team can't hit in general, but they definitely can't hit lefties. They have a 178 batting average against lefties, Liz. 178. Oh, they have a 561 OPS in 343 plate appearances versus lefties this year. 343 is the third highest amount of plate appearances any team has had to face lefties. So maybe people have figured out this one neat trick to beat the Phillies. They can't hit lefties? Great. Let's put lefties in front of them all of the time and let them try to solve the problem, which, by the way, it's been years now. They haven't solved it. Fortunately, the Braves are only throwing one lefty at them this weekend as far as starters go. His name's Chris Sale. I think he's pretty good. You want to move on to defense, or do you have any further offense thoughts about the Phillies, Dad?
I cannot possibly say anything else about
great
offense.
On to the defense. The number of balls that get through this infield is staggering. Jim Salisbury said there were several grounders that got through the infield that were due to either defensive positioning or range problems. He said there were three of them in the last game alone that he noticed on the Phillies show. Justin Crawford beefed an easy fly ball recently. Felix Reyes, who is not an outfielder, is now an outfielder and platooning with Brandon Marsh. Alec Boehm made some nifty plays at third against the Cubs, but you know he can have a bad night anytime and has already had some this season as well. This team has committed 16 errors, which is tied with the Rockies, and only four other teams have committed more. I mean, with defense, I'm so much more about the eyeball test than the defensive stats. Defense is a much harder thing to measure through statistics. And I'm not saying, you know, like, well, I saw them be bad and so they're bad. But like, you can honestly say that at this point. You can watch a Phillies game any day of the week and you can still spot, oh, okay, this team is not a strong defensive team. Adolis Garcia has done some great defensive stuff in right field. And obviously, like, Bryson Stott is supposed to be a very great fielder in the middle infield. And, you know, there's little supposed to be's and projected successes across the diamond here for the Phillies. But for the most part, you're seeing a team that really struggle on defense.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. The eye test is essentially what I use. And it's just been rough. It's been rough watching them. I love that it's not just range problems. It's not just the players themselves, but the Phillies are positioning them in places that aren't great. And so that is a little disturbing to me, that it's not just the players. It's the team telling them where to stand, and that ends up being ill-fitting for the play. You know, you can't always get it right, but with the number of errors they've had that have involved that, it seems like that is a problem that they might want to look at and figure out. Not that they can or will, but...
this is very much the eyeball test. But just like a couple years ago, it felt like, boy, the Phillies must lead the league in fly balls that look like home runs and die on the warning track. This year, it feels like the Phillies must lead the league in double play balls that they can't turn and that Bryce Harper is catching the throw at first while walking away from the bag. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I've looked up and seen that so many times. I've heard the inflection of Tom McCarthy's voice go from, could be a double, could be two, and it's like, and it's not. And like, and they couldn't turn it. He's safe at first, you know.
Sidebar, by the way, God bless Tom McCarthy and everyone else calling these games. I haven't listened to the radio broadcast for a little while because they get real depressed. They could get real depressed, and then listening to Larry, if he's around, is difficult. But I've really, Tom McCarthy, God bless him. He's just been doing such a great job. He's good. I might not like all of his calls all the time, but he's very good at his job, like exceptionally good.
Yes, and that's going to become more and more something people lean on as the season goes on. Yes, the people watching will unquestionably go down. But yeah, in a season like this that's shaping up to be the kind of season that seems to be shaping up to be, guys like Tom McCarthy and John Kruk wind up playing a huge role. And yeah, you got to give credit where credit's due, because there's going to be plenty of nights where they're having about as much fun as you are watching this team, and they can't be openly negative about it, at least not while the cameras are running. So
no, and I want to give Kevin Stalker some credit too. He's like improved by leaps and bounds since starting with the Phillies, to the point now that they're letting him do play-by-play for a couple of innings with Scott like next to him doing color, which is really neat. And I think it's an interesting way to sort of, I mean, I don't know if they're giving him experience for the future or if it's just something that he wants to do, but it's really cool that they're letting him do it. And he's, even when he's not on play-by-play, he's so funny. He's just really funny.
Yeah. So just to go back to the defense.
Yeah, sorry.
You know, that being a team that has never really, you know, excelled at defense in this current era, with these guys, you know, they're once again poorly, you know, have a poor showing on defense. Do you feel like this is an area where the Phillies should even be trying to improve right now? Or is this just like, this is part of their overall DNA, you know, kind of as it is what it is situation? Do you feel like with as many other problems as the team has, should defense even be something that they're like focusing on right now?
Until they win it, I mean, they've got to be focusing on everything because every little thing can help them win a game. But at this point, they just need to win a game, and defense is not going to do that for them. It'll help them not lose, but I don't know if they need help winning. It's different than not trying to not lose. They need to try to win this time. You know what I mean?
You know, it's bad when this is the feedback. You know, I think instead of losing, what they should try to do is win. I'm not faulting you. I'm saying this is where we're at. This is where the commentary's
There's
at.
Nothing else like, to say. Like, there is the point?
I will tease that at the end of this episode, I managed to find, because so many people are just like, all right, well, these are the Phillies' problems right now. Like, just all you can do is list them. And what you're looking for is like, okay, what are solutions? And you try to come up with some on your own. It's kind of hard. But at the same time, you know, you can see, it feels like the longer this goes on, the bigger the solution has to be. And this is just not the time of year when big solutions present themselves, because teams are still saying, well, it's a month into the season. We have all this invested in, like, well, we want to see how this plays out. Guys have had rough months before. Even Dave Dombrowski was like, yeah, look back at the 1983 White Sox. They were 16-24 and then wound up going to the ALCS. So I wrote about that actually on Baseball Prospectus, a feature today, talking about how teams that are struggling like the Phillies are, The last phase of their struggles is always going back in time. And the worse and longer that these things go on, that these bad stretches go on, the further back in time they like to travel. And we kind of like spiraled backwards from his comment about the 1983 White Sox to all these teams back to the 60s that were referencing. Well, things haven't been this bad since blah, blah, blah. Well, they haven't been this bad since blah, blah, blah. And until you wind up back at the
1883
Phillies,
at the founding of the Phillies.
But yeah, you can read that over on Baseball Prospectus today. So I forget where I was originally starting with that point, but we'll just go back to pointing at what's wrong with the Phillies. And defense, my point was that I think you can get by with the shoddy defense the Phillies typically have as long as the hitting and the pitching are working. And the hitting and pitching just aren't working, as we know. So let's talk about the pitching. This is probably the biggest issue because the starting rotation, when I'm talking about things that weren't supposed to be question marks, this was the thing that is supposed to work first for the Phillies.
Uh-huh.
Even without Zach Wheeler, even without Ranger Suarez, it was like, look, there's are still five good starting pitchers here who have, like, you know, different context around their projections. Obviously, a rookie in your rotation brings its own X factors, and you got to assume Sanchez and Lizardo are going to maintain the success levels they were pitching at, and you got to hope that Wheeler comes back and pitches as well as he has in the past, if maybe even just close to as well as he has in the past as he recovers. And Aaron Nola is just, you know, forever a question mark.
Himself.
He's just a question mark made out of question marks. Who knows what you're going to get out of him? At the end of the day, though, the starting rotation's ERA right now is 5.58. They do still have a high strikeout percentage. They are a high strikeout group. They also have a very low walk percentage. So that's good. That's one of those peripherals you hear about as a good sign of this all evening out someday. Maybe it does. But nobody wants to hear that right now. They just want to be in the middle of a win streak again. Not the beginning, like we said. You don't want to be at like one win into a win streak because then you're just like, whatever. You want to be in the middle of a win streak where it feels like they've racked up some wins and there's still more to come. The Phillies are obviously not there, partially because their starters are also giving up the third highest line drive rate in all of baseball. Zach Wheeler is coming back this weekend. He'll be limited to 6 innings and about 90 pitches, according to NBC Sports Philly. No starting pitchers for the Phillies have reached the 7th inning this season.
Oh my God.
That staggered Ruben Amaro on the Phillies show podcast.
Wow. It's been almost a month, guys.
Laughing at one point. It took like, I don't know, 6-7 games for I think a White Sox starter to reach the 6th inning of a game, and I was like, ah ha ha, here we are a couple weeks later, the Phillies have a stat to match that. And yeah, you know, we all know Dave Dombrowski likes starters that go deeper into games. These are all starters who like to go deeper into games, and the fact that they're not, I mean, that's, it's not unexpected, but it's not a good sign. Starting pitcher ERA is 28th in the majors. That's down from 2nd best last year. Christopher Sanchez allowed a, like I said, career high in hits in his last start. He has allowed 36 in his last 4 starts, most by a Phillies pitcher in a 4-start span since 2014. That's courtesy of Paul Casella of MLB.com. Then the bullpen. They're part of the pitching staff. They don't have their best pitcher right now either, and Joan Duran being on the injured list. They just gave up their 100th hit of the season. Hooray, the Centennial.
My God.
That is only 6th in Major League Baseball, believe it or
not.
Oh,
wow.
But still pretty high up there. The Phillies bullpen also leads the league in hitting batters with runners on base. I like that stat. I like that stat.
What
I like that I found
thing.
It. I like that it's not even like their top 3. They are number 1. It's, you know, they're up by 1. The next team below them has 5. But that is a stat that I can tell you some other stats, but you know they're not good. And that one, I think, sums everything up pretty well. You know what I mean?
Nothing's working.
So, hey, Brad Keller, just to echo Ruben Amaro's question, why challenge Seiya Suzuki with a 1-0 fastball down the middle? He's been one of the hottest hitters in the sport. Why throw that pitch? Why? Just to pick out one little moment from a sea of moments, but still, why throw that pitch?
I mean, they were so scared of Seiya Suzuki after that they walked him. And I don't do that. That's just, I get you get out there and you feel good. And I got to wonder who called for that. Was that, you know, who called for that? Did that come from Brad Keller's brain?
Didn't come from JT Realmuto, who also is injured.
Yep. That's why I was slowing down. I'm like, wait a minute. I don't think I've seen JT lately.
Yeah. I think the most effective thing Rafael Marchand has done lately is avoid that rat that ran through the dugout. He was cited in that article as well.
Because he's certainly not giving good advice to the pitchers because woof.
You know, when a squirrel runs across the field, everyone's like, oh, it's good luck. But of course, the Phillies get a rat running through the visitor's dugout. God only knows what that means.
Symbol of something terrible.
I think like we said, this team isn't a challenge to anyone. It's good news when another team sees the Phillies on their schedule. Teams laugh and frolic as they easily beat the Phillies in every game. This is the nightmare. This is worse than like the team struggling. The team has now situated itself as the team to play in baseball because all these teams want to beat up on the Phillies because they're just very easy to beat. And I think what I've seen mentioned a lot lately is the year 2012. I think for our age bracket, people, Phillies fans, live in fear of 2012.
Oh,
the
always.
Arrival of it. Yeah. The arrival of it, the realization that it's happening, the end of an era that it represents, the reaping after the sowing. So when we see the Phillies, Liz, talking after games about they know what they need to do and they know they need to play better, the darkest moment hits when the fans watching realize perhaps at this point, maybe you haven't reached this point, but the darkest moment can be when you realize the question isn't when is this team going to start playing better? It's the 2012 question of, oh, you can't play better.
It's not when, it's will they? It's can they? And we haven't seen any evidence thus far that shows it's possible. I've been thinking about 2012 since the end of the first series, just because it's always, that was a moment for me, the 2012 season. I lost my mind as it was going on. I'm like, this can't be happening. This is such a great team. Nothing has changed from last year. And so I spent so much time during the season, not even for a piece, just for my own edification, researching teams that had been amazing 1 year and really bad the next year, or at least middling the next year, and how they bounced back the year after. And I didn't find any good information about it. And so I stopped looking and never talked about it again.
I destroyed my research and incinerated my computer. And
pretty much. Pretty much. I just, because it's always in there. And I know that's what we're all fearing. And I think if it does come to pass, I don't know if this symbolizes the end of an era, but it will certainly be a symbol of whatever comes next. And sometimes it'll be like a get back. It'll, you know, they could have a bounce back season. We're way in the future now. But like everyone's fear is that this is just it. We've seen everything this team can do. And in fact, just like the 2008 run, we saw the best of it at the very beginning.
And unfortunately,
that's what's really
time,
depressing, is that we saw the best of it at the start. And it never was able to equal that in the subsequent years, and it was just sliding further and further back. That's a very Phillies thing to do.
And they don't have a World Series title to stake this era to. So
exactly.
If this era is to be over, then there is not even, the best they got was a National League pennant in a World Series they kind of weren't going to win. It felt like I was convinced they were going to win at certain points, but ultimately looking back, the Astros were just a better team that year. So I wouldn't say, even after all of this, I can't say that I still want to see the team like play at its best, by which I mean its best may not be very good. I just don't think this is it. I want to see these Phillies play without the, let's just say without the bad bounces, the bad luck. I want to see them play like at their highest level. That's going to happen at some point. It just may not be very high. I just want to see what it is. And then I'll feel like we got the full scope of what this team actually is this year. And then you can make a better judgment, because right now they're playing the lowliest of the low. They're getting nothing that they're supposed to, skill and talent and output wise for the most part, but they're also not getting any breaks. And I feel like until the bad breaks start breaking a little better, then you're going to have a better idea of who this team is comprehensively. But I'm not saying I feel particularly hopeful or good. I just don't feel like we have the full picture yet, because this team hasn't really played well, quote unquote, for any stretch of time to learn what this team looks like when they're playing well. You know, like the Twins are not going to probably make the playoffs, but they've been playing really well to start the season early. So like they know they're capable of that somehow. And eventually when they're playing at their worst, you'll understand, okay, so that's the whole realm. That's the whole scope that the Twins offer. I feel like we haven't gotten that full view of the Phillies yet, and I'm waiting to see that. But for now, yeah, I mean, this is a, you look at the short-term future and you're like, well, they say there's nothing they can do. And you look at the long-term future, you're like, well, they're locked in on a bunch of guys, and the guys they could move in a lot of ways aren't making themselves super appealing, except for Brandon Marsh. So not sure what the story is there either.
Nope. Nope. It's all bad. And I mean, I want to see them play at their best as well, but I would like to see them play without the pressure of a 9-game losing streak, which is just, you know, it's been growing and growing and growing. I'd like to see them play after maybe winning 2 out of 3.
Right.
They can win 2 out of 3 games, period. I would like to see them play the fourth game in that series to see how they do, because that's a confidence builder. That's normal. Right now, winning 1 out of 3 is just not, it's just like, wow, we finally got a win. Now we have to play again tomorrow.
Right. There's only two outcomes a game can have. And sometimes, you know, a bad team's going to luck their way into a couple of wins, whether they deserve it or not. So, yeah, that doesn't always tell you too much.
I've been digging into Philly's Reddit lately, just out of curiosity. I've been in there for a while, but I'm just sort of drilling down. There is a man in there who is burning a Phillies baseball card every day until they win 3 in a row.
Now, that's a healthy output.
That's
I love
the
right thing to do.
Going in there, I feel the spirit of all Phillies fans wrap around me, because there isn't, at the moment, there isn't a lot of, like, there's been anger. There's been anger everywhere. But right now, we're all sort of in the self-care, you know, caring for each other kind of place. Because now the losing streak has gotten so long that we no longer care about the players. We care about each other and what we're doing to get through this. And so I enjoy that method. It's just like I'm angry. I hate this. I'm going to physically burn something once a day. What a great way to get out your anger. I'm just going to incinerate an item.
That's how some people are reacting to the Phillies. Here's some more commentary on the current Phillies situation. Over on the Phillies Show, the podcast hosted by Todd Zielecki, Jim Salisbury, and Ruben Amaro, they pointed out that 9 games is the longest losing streak for the Phillies since 2018. They lost 11 straight games in 1999. That'll be the next one they knock down should the losses continue. Jim Salisbury called this as ugly as I can remember of a start, and I covered this team through a lot of the dark ages. The only difference is the personnel is so much better, meaning this team has the much higher ceiling, and they're playing as poorly as some of the really bad teams that Jim Salisbury has covered over the years. Ken Rosenthal said that we've seen a team that might be getting old before our very eyes.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't really have a lot of insightful things to say. He was one of those guys who's just listing all the things that are wrong with the Phillies and all the statistics you've seen circulated, and he's calling it age. I haven't been as focused as much on the Phillies just being older and worse. That just seems like less of a factor at the moment to me, but who knows? Mm-hmm. Maybe the guys being a little older is driving some of these shortcomings. Who knows? An evaluator from an NL team told Scott Lauber, "I did not see this coming. How many big hits have they gotten? The guys that have the back of the baseball card that have been able to do things have to start getting a couple of big hits when it counts. Not always the 3-run homer. Just a line drive with men on base to drive in some runs is going to make you a better team." I hope that was relayed to the Phillies. Have they considered hitting a line drive with runners on base? I'd put that on the bulletin board if I were them.
Yeah, I honestly don't know if they have, because they're all so interested in getting the big hit. And you've got, like, it's the only thing on Bryce Harper's mind every time he's up. And this is when watching Bryce Harper can get really difficult, because he's digging and he's trying so hard, and he's looking for whatever that little piece of talent is within him that has to be put into place, and he's not finding it. And the Phillies aren't finding it. And it's what makes everything a lot more difficult. At least, you know, Harper is sort of, he's the face of this team. And so when he's not doing well, everyone feels like, well, there's no hope. There's just no hope. Harper can't do well. What chance does everyone else have?
Trey Turner echoed those sentiments on ESPN, saying, "Yeah, it sucks. Not having much fun in here, which is tough. This is a great game. We're lucky to play it. And when you're expected to win and you want to win and it's not happening, it's tough and not fun." So he broke that down for people. Jim Bowden over at The Athletic said, "Too many players are too comfortable and not being pushed. This screams that moves need to be made between now and the trade deadline if the Phillies are going to be able to secure a playoff spot." Liz, if only there was some kind of off season in which there is time and resources to make moves like the ones Bowden is describing. I know. Somehow the Phillies just never have a move they can make until they suddenly do and then it doesn't work out. But still, seems like the kind of thing that could have been addressed over the winter. Who knows? Here's a discrepancy for you. Jesus Luzardo said after his latest start that you've just got to flush it. You know, get to the next game. And it's a sentiment we've heard JT Realmuto express in the past. We've heard Kyle Schwarber express that in the past. Every time they're struggling, well, you just got to flush it and move on to the next one. Makes a lot of sense. But Bryce Harper said via ESPN, "I can't remember something like this in my career. I think people should feel what it feels like. Obviously, you don't want to just sit here and just say, oh, hey, let's turn the page immediately. You got to know what it feels like and get through it. You got to get through the mud sometimes and weather the storm a little bit." Liz, should the Phillies just flush every loss and go into the next one as fresh as they can, or sit in a prison of their own making?
I feel like there might be some middle ground here.
I don't think so.
No, you don't think so? I think if we were at loss five, you could still say, let's flush it. We could still, it's fine. But we're on the precipice of a 10-game losing streak. And at that point, you can't just flush the losses because everything that's happening is now endemic of a certain thing. Like, it's whatever's happening is related to the big thing, and not being able to figure it out is bad. Like, you don't want to wallow in your own misery, because that's not going to help. You know, I think you have to feel it, you have to get through it. That's an individual thing, but I think it's also a team thing. It's a team, you have to do it. And again, I just don't know what, no one knows what it's like in there. And I'm just curious to see what type of support guys have, how talkative everyone is, because a lot of getting through this, again, like, you just have to keep playing and a win will happen eventually. But, you know, waiting for it is really hard because you just don't know when it's going to end and you're sitting there constantly sad. So I would be curious to see how everyone is dealing with this sort of mentally, because I will say it seems like there could be a problem again, yet again. I just, mental resources have finally made their way into baseball as a positive thing. And what I need is for teams and players to realize it can be employed all the time.
It also depends on who is here and the makeup of this team, which has also become a subject at this point. When it becomes less about what can these guys do and more about, well, why are these guys here? The architects of this roster have not shined, Jim Salisbury said, trying to give some blame to the front office as well for putting this team together. "We've all seen the lists now circulating their way through social media channels of guys Dave Dombrowski's front office has signed and released since he got here. It doesn't look great. It's not a flattering list full of nailed decisions. This team has not made a lot of great decisions as far as filling out the supporting cast around a group of stars. There's a lot of money going into dead spots. Taiwan Walker was released. We haven't mentioned that yet. That's something that, I mean, that just sucks. It has to do with the amount of money they gave. They gave him $72 million. You know, I think a lot of people got more frustrated with him because of the role that the years and money he was getting kind of dictated he had. He was more than just like the kind of slot ball guy who's filling in an emergency, but that was more or less the role that he had, you know, the long man, swing reliever, whatever you want to call it. That's kind of the role he wound up in. And if you're a starting pitcher who basically is spotting the other team 2-3 runs every time you come out there in the first inning, I mean, that can't last. And all anybody wants to say is what a great guy he is. And I kept hearing the phrase, "Oh, he always took the ball." I know what you're saying when you say that, but you're just like, what pitcher has been offered the ball and not taken it? Anyway, the point is that he's a great guy and a great teammate. You know, I'm not invalidating that. It's just at the end of the day, look at the numbers here. And You gotta go. This is one area where it's like, all right, well, it's good that this guy won't be making starts anymore, but who knows? Maybe the next guy won't be super effective either. The Phillies have also lost their closers, Joan Duran, like I mentioned. They've lost their starting catcher, JT Realmuto, to the injured list as well. They don't really have the depth to fill in those spots long-term, certainly not at catcher. And then perhaps the most alarming roster change so far, Liz, Bryson Stott stopped using A-OK as his walk-up song. Did you know that?
No. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. That's like a mainstay. Like when I hear that, I'm like, oh, Bryson Stott. And I always, no matter where I am in the house, I'm always singing along because you have to, it's Bryson Stott's walk up music.
I don't know if it's a forever thing, but yeah, it was noted in one game recap that he did not use it. And so that indicates perhaps things are not A-okay for the Philadelphia Phillies, Liz.
You don't say.
So with Walker released, Alan Rangel is now your sixth starter. He went back down to the minors, pretty sure. Gene Cabrera and Bryce Wilson, they're around. Both pitching poorly in the minors.
They're guys.
Jesse Rogers of ESPN wrote, and this was an interesting one for me, and keep in mind, this is chiefly a Cubs writer for ESPN. Thompson didn't view the move, the Taiwan Walker release, as a wake-up call to his veteran locker room, saying, I think they know that already, as it pertains to the situation the team is facing. The clubhouse vibe seemed normal Thursday, as the team prepared for its game against the Cubs. Liz, did that tick you off, reading that? It kind of ticked me off.
Yeah, it kind of ticked me off, too. Like, I don't. No, like is there a way to interpret that as a wake up call, considering that I feel like they've been on the precipice of releasing him for at least two seasons previous.
Right.
Because he was never what they wanted him, what they had expected him to be. You know, he went out there, he had some good starts that really helped the Phillies, but by and large, he wasn't good. And releasing him just means they finally decided that the damage they take whenever he's on the field is no longer worth the money that they've spent. You know, I think they kept him around because they were paying him so much. And that's it. Otherwise, I think he would have been out the door years ago.
Releasing Taiwan Walker isn't like killing the main character in the first scene and then making people go, wow, I guess anybody can go at any time. It's not. It is indicative of, we've entered the point where when we can, we got to start bumping some of these guys off because they are not getting the job done. And you obviously aren't able to do that in the majority of situations where the guy isn't getting the job done yet. In this case, you could. So I agree that this is not like the, whoa, wake up call to a veteran locker room. It's just the, oh, they know already what they need to do. And yeah, I know they keep saying that, but that's kind of the issue, right? Like there's a version of this where they're just saying, we know we need to play better all season long, and they just never do. And this is the problem people have with Rob Thompson. He's like, well, why repeat something? I mean, not to go back to the movie metaphor, but it's like in a screenplay. You convey the information, you don't spend the rest of the screenplay conveying it, and that's how Rob Thompson typically approaches communication in these situations. He's like, well, look, they know what they need to know. Why would I go out there and repeat it to them over and over and over again? And while that's showing a lot of trust in your players, exactly the kind of manager that Rob Thompson has been and exactly the kind of manager that players have enjoyed playing for before, it also just creates the question, okay, but is that what the Phillies need right now? Because if they're getting accusations of complacency and lethargy and just overall
Bleh.
Then, you know, coming in and being like, everything's normal, you guys know what you need to do. Yeah, that's not going to jack anybody up the way Adolis Garcia was out there trying to be like, hey, let's win and like come back and stuff. let's be excited about this stuff. It just doesn't seem like that. It feels like they're Teflon to that kind of thing right now. And any attempt to get them up is just going to fly out. It's just going to fly away. So,
yeah.
It's a bummer, but they do have a series to play this weekend anyway. And hey, look, I promised you solutions at the end of this. And so I'm going to give you the solutions provided by, you guessed it, Jim Bowden of The Athletic. The one writer.
Friggin' idiot who does not deserve a job. My gosh.
The one writer who actually offered solutions to teams' problems instead of just listing the problems. Thank you, Jim. So few people, like I said, they're actually offering actual solutions. It's too early to make trades. And once you fire Rob Thompson or Kevin Long, well, you know, you're also getting the ball rolling. You fire the manager and the hitting coach, you're just introducing
the idea
that,
everyone.
yeah, if the team continues struggling, you can't fire them again. So you got to be a little thoughtful about when you fire those guys, if you're going to fire them, because then, you know, suddenly you and the front office are under scrutiny. And then the players are under scrutiny and getting rid of them. And that creates that's a whole other phase of this disaster. The Athletic says, however, the front office needs to be working hard on adding more offense to the lineup, with right field, left field, and third base the three main target areas. Doesn't Brandon Marsh play left field? Eh, whatever.
Yeah.
It's too early to make trades, but preparing for them in earnest must start now. They also need to hope that Wheeler and Nola can find their way back to form and that Painter will be a legitimate Rookie of the Year candidate by season's end. So, Liz, get ready to make trades and hope two pitchers pitch better. That's the plan. You feel better?
Completely. I mean, it's hard to believe that those were not suggestions that were offered by others. In fact, maybe they had been implied in all of the articles and no one felt the need to say it because duh.
Well, it's just so obvious, you know, they know what they need to know. Like, it's the Rob Thompson approach again. So those are your solutions that the Phillies will take into their weekend series against the Braves at Truist Park. Over the weekend. Andrew Painter's Rookie of the Year campaign begins anew in Game 1 against Grant Holmes tonight at 7:15. Game 2 will be Saturday at 7:15 as well. Zach Wheeler makes his 2026 debut. Remember, 6 innings, 90 pitches for old Zach. Hopefully he can stretch that as far as the Phillies are willing to let it go. He'll be facing Bryce Elder, who has just been phenomenal, unfortunately, for the Atlanta.
Of course.
This year. Just absolutely crushing it. He has a 150 ERA and 29 strikeouts through 4 starts this year already. In game 3, the matinee at 1:35 will be on Sunday. Aaron Nola gets the ball in that game, and he'll be taking on, you guessed it, Braves left-handed ace Chris Sale. Hope you won at least one of the other two games, because I'm not sure the way Phillies hit lefties and how good of a lefty Chris Sale is, you're getting much room to operate in Game 3 of this series. But
they
that's
just
what
picked
the Phillies
him up, and he was brilliant. What, I hate them. I hate them so much.
That's what the Phillies have in store for them this weekend. And Liz, you got any final words of wisdom for our Phils before we wrap up here?
No words of wisdom. I just want to say other things I found in Reddit was a constant belief that this is happening because Harry's the K, that the Callis family has cursed the Phillies. And
I'm
honestly,
willing to allow
this,
that.
I know. I at this point, I'm kind of on board. I'll be doing more research on this for,
yes.
And by that I mean reading Reddit posts. I'll be doing more research on this for our next roundtable. But something
I'd like
to think about.
I'd like you to really fill out like the curse, like talk about like how it happened. And evidence that it's currently happening, and just really flesh it out. So there's a textbook Wikipedia definition of the curse of Harry the Case, because I don't want people just throwing that term out there without an explicit definition of what happened. Curses need to be documented, Liz, and I think we might be in the middle of one.
I think, and we're in no better position to identify and figure this out now.
It is your
journalistic there's nothing
responsibility
better
to do this. Yeah. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to my co-host, Liz Rocher. You can get new episodes of Hittin' Season 3 times a week at billypenn.com/hittinseason, as well as anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find bonus Phillies podcasts at the Hittin' Season Patreon at patreon.com/hittinseason. I'm Justin Clue, and from WHYY, that's the ballgame. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.